For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
The unsurpassed profound and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even 100,000,000,000 kalpas. Now I can see and hear.
Douglas Floyd, I'm the temple director and president of the board at Ancient Dragon. Taigen is traveling, and Yozan Eric Schutt, who's been giving a series of talks about the Paramitas, is out of town. So I was asked to talk about today's Paramita. The Paramitas are aspects of our life and practice that lead us to awakening, or I think we would tend to say more, they express our awakened mind. And they're generally treated as six, although in the Avatamsaka Sutra that list is expanded to 10, and their generosity, ethical conduct, following precepts, choosing the healthy over the unhealthy, the productive over the unproductive. Patience, effort, meditation, and wisdom. These are called the Paramitas because of, I understand, a pun in Sanskrit, or sometimes called the perfections, most often the perfections, sometimes they're called transcendent practices, the para aspect of it. And that pun emphasizes the fact that this is, these aspects of our life are sort of the fulfillment of virtues or emphases in our life that lead us to awakening, but the transcendent practice aspect is telling you that they can be viewed from the aspect of prajna, transcendent wisdom, to understand them differently, but also just the very exercise of the paramitas is itself a transcendence of our small grasping self that's caught up in the three poisons of greed, anger, and delusion. Today, as I said, today's paramita is effort. And in Sanskrit, the word is virya. And vir is a root that's carried over into our languages through Indo-European into virility and virtue. So the root in Sanskrit is talking about strength. But I have to say that Virya Paramita is really talking about what are the different things we do to keep our practice moving forward and overcoming obstacles and impediments in our practice. And so the translation is all over the place. I mean, sometimes it's zeal or enthusiasm or strength or persistence, effort. So you can see it's all over the place. And it's not treated generally in a very analytical way. It's really, most of the time when virya is spoken of, it really is sort of practical attempt to inspire your practice, to keep it moving. The purpose of birya and the attention to birya is to overcome essentially three different kinds of impediments to our practice. The first one is usually called laziness. And I think it's clear from the way it's described in the literature that it's not just laziness, but all of the kinds of inertia that prevent us from starting practice or undertaking practice on a day-to-day basis. And it can be idleness and just the sense that we're comfortable the way we are. Why do I need to do this? The next one is usually treated as the distraction of frivolous activities and amusements. But it's really distraction of all sorts. That anything that keeps us distracted from our practice. You know, gee, tonight I watched Big Bang Theory instead of sitting on my cushion during that time. But there could be other kinds of distractions as well. Problems that you allow to overcome this time that you can dedicate to practice. The third area is really called, it's discouragement of different sorts. It's either despondency because your practice isn't showing fruits that you had anticipated, or in particular, it's self-doubt. It's a lack of confidence that you're going to be able to do whatever it is you've come to this practice to do. And so birya is treated then as, what are the different ways that you can overcome these impediments? And for the first one, the laziness or inertia, also, they always call out sleep as an impediment, the desire to sleep instead of practicing. The antidote is usually called aspiration. And for us, I mean, it's clear everyone sitting here today has been practicing for quite a while. So I think we all have an idea of what our aspiration is. And dealing, we've come to this practice usually with a sense of all sorts of concerns and anxieties, and with the hope to practice and step outside of those, come to some different way of leading our life that isn't tied up with that anxiousness and suffering that we feel. Traditionally in Buddhist literature, it's a different culture, you get a fair amount of fire and brimstone. So you're not a slug, you're not idle, and you don't get caught up in sleep. You don't let that keep you from practicing, because if you do, then your next rebirth is going to be in a fiery hell of some sort. And on the other hand, accompanying that is your aspiration. You would think about that along with the preciousness of this opportunity to practice and move forward to awakening. For us, it's different. I mean, we all know why we're here. We can look back on that and what we hope to attain. So I don't think we're thinking about fiery hells or pleasant heavens, and don't need to. We're here, and we've practiced for a while. So I think we just, when we're overcome with a little inertia, just not seeming to have the motivation to practice, I think we can think about easily enough what it was that brought us to practice, what it is we're hoping to get out of it. As far as the distractions are concerned, the usual antidote is referred to as joy in practice. And I think we know about that. It's a combination of practicing, particularly sitting zazen, allowing us to that have turned and have a different perspective on the difficult emotions and distraction that we experience much of the time. And in doing that, in stepping out of those emotions and that confusion, feeling the coolness on the one hand or the warmth of waking up to this moment and to this life. The final antidote to the lack of confidence and despondency in practice is not rocket science. I mean, the answer is just keep reminding yourself that, yes, you can do this. All you have to do is to keep doing it. Be persistent. Maintain the constancy of your practice. So that's about, you know, I have to say that if you look at the Sanskrit literature, the classical Buddhist literature, for example, the great work on the paramitas is probably in the Bodhicaryavatara, sometimes called the Bodhisattvacaryavatara, that Nyozan spoke about last week, sometimes translated as entering the path of enlightenment or the Bodhisattva way of life. And it has sections on each of the paramitas. The shortest one, I guess, is virya. It's not a topic that leads itself to lots of classifications and the sort of the love of Sanskrit writing, of breaking everything down into different classes, and within each class it has different aspects and so on, ad nauseum. They don't try to do that with virya. And so I guess I would say that the antidotes and what keeps us moving in our practice, aside from thinking about reminding ourselves of what we're experiencing every day and how are we going to respond to that, is really the joy in practice itself on the one hand, and vow. Just resolution that I'm going to do this. You know, I think we keep moving by the fact that our practice, generally speaking, is rewarding. And when we come up with this resistance, which happens all the time, if we sit down more often than not, I think we stand up being glad that we had done it. That we have stepped out of whatever the distraction was or whatever the anxiety was that was slowing us down. And we've sat and we're going, okay, yes, I'm glad I did this. I can do it again. That repetition and the reward that has come from doing that over and over and over again makes it easier and easier for us to sit down the next time when perhaps we'd rather not. But even if your practice has been going well, there's just no way around the fact that you can hit times when you just don't want to do it. It's just not seeming, maybe it's not seeming rewarding to you, or you're feeling a little stale. And I think what gets us through that is our practice of vow, our practice of resolution. Just saying, I'm going to do this. Making the commitment to do it. And I think that obviously is particularly relevant right now as we enter into our spring practice commitment period. I have found that resolution to practice works best in a number of ways. You know, what you need to do is to say, I am going to do this. I'm resolving to do this. Not, well, I'm going to try to sit X days a week. Is to schedule when you're going to do it, how much time you're going to do it. And it helps to say, I'm going to do it at this time and this time. I'm going to do it when I get up in the morning or before I go to bed at night or both. But always have a time that allows you to schedule around that so that. Because we're very good at coming up with excuses. Well, I'd love to sit tonight, but I can't because dot, dot, dot. Making that commitment to that time is very helpful. At the same time, committing to an amount of sitting, for example, that's a little challenging. It's not so easy. But not pushing yourself too hard. I mean, if you're, you know, we don't have any first-timers here today, but, you know, I would never suggest to anyone that as soon as they've had their introduction to Zazen that they start sitting 35 minutes or 40 minutes at home each time. That's just going to be discouraging. So it's very helpful to start small, get used to that, and add 5 minutes at a time. And then when you feel like, yes, I can manage this, to add another 5 minutes up until you say, okay, this is going to be it for me. This is what I can do and am comfortable doing. Repetition is the big thing, and constancy. I mean, it's not really a matter of the effort that's involved in virya is not some sort of straining and pushing hard in your practice and concentrating hard. It's that light pushing and pushing and pushing to get the ball rolling and to keep it rolling. Once it's going, it doesn't take some sort of strain to do it. But once, if we sit regularly, we find it, the sitting, I think, more and more rewarding and easier to continue. And that is, you know, Shantideva, the author of the Bodhicaryavatara, would talk about, you know, as long as you're patient and as long as you're simply continuing to do the practice, you will wake up someday. I think we would take a different position about that, right? Certainly someday there would be some sorts of experiences, but in doing it, we experience awakening in our sitting, and that inspiration of doing that over and over and over again as we sit is what leads us to continue to express, to attempt to express this awakening over and over and more in our lives. And finally, that that discouragement. I think I spoke about that to some extent last week. It's a matter of, you know, discouragement tends to come because we have some, frequently have some unexamined expectations of what practice is going to be. You know, that if we're practicing, we're going to, sort of the equivalent of being able to speak French or play the piano, if you practice, you're going to come to this, you're going to be calm, and you'll be able to walk through the day and never get excited again, you'll never be dull, you'll never be distracted, you'll always be happy, you'll have clear understanding of everything going on in your life, what its meaning is, and how you ought to live from now on. And when that doesn't happen, we tend to get discouraged. That's an opportunity to reconsider what your expectations are, but also to look at what your practice is and the value of awakening right now, in this moment, every day in our practice. You know, I think there's no question that there are fruits of practice that people have with insights and profound, moving emotional experiences. And at the same time, there is awakening right now. In our practice, in our zazen, as we step outside of our confusion and clinging and greed and anger and anxiety, and come back to this moment and recognize this moment and live this moment, having stepped outside of that, the kleshas, the three poisons. So practice itself, along with vow, are the great supports for our continuing to practice. Just keep going. Be gentle with yourself, but push yourself a little bit. It's very good to, once a week, maybe sit a little longer than you would on an everyday basis. It's good to do all day sittings and sessions. But the real meat of the practice is the consistency and the repetition over and over and over again, where we find the value in the sitting. So I'm going to leave it at that and see if anyone else has any suggestions about what keeps their practice going. Jamie.
I was going to say thank you for your talk. And I don't think I have very much to offer, but except for that, I think one of the coolest things to watch is actually how you go about your practice, because I don't know everything that goes on in your life, but I think I have a feeling of like how many responsibilities you've taken on and how you like seem to like keep going and keep fulfilling your responsibilities. And it's very inspiring to see you do that. So you giving this talk on energy is, I think, very fitting. Just want to say that.
Thank you. I tend to find one of the great values is having Sangha, being able to come here and sit with other people. This realization that we practice together and help each other, and other people really do benefit from all of our coming together, I find very inspirational and very helpful in my own practice.
So the thing that helps me practice regularly is making a routine out of it. So I get up in the morning and I sit, and it's part of my morning routine. I find that the danger in making it into a routine, it makes it a lot easier to do, but then it starts, I start to lose, I guess, beginner's mind. And so while it becomes easier to sit, it becomes, I think I'm maybe paying attention to it less or concentrating less. I don't know. It seems to me that there might be a bit of a trade-off between making it easy to sit and I'm not sure what else to say. But
yeah, I think there a trap can be. You schedule a time and there's repetition, and I think that, you know, you could think of it as developing a habit. But it's different. I think what we do with the repetition of practice and scheduling time is different from habit, which is kind of a conditioned response to a situation. But it's always there, you're right. And especially, you know, I don't know about you, but I always tend to sit either first thing in the morning or last thing at night. And that impediment or obstacle of sleepiness and fatigue is real. But it's also, it's easy sometimes to sit there and just say, okay, I'm on my cushion, I'm doing what I need to do, without having that engagement.
Yeah.
Because our practice is, we're not straining, but we're supposed to be alive to it, or alive in it. This whole moment comes alive in our practice when we sit up straight and are aware and breathe. And if we don't, it's not just a matter of keeping the cushion warm. It's not necessarily a whole lot more than that that's required of us. But we do have to be here. We have to show up. Ken?
Jay? Yeah. I sort of agree with what you're saying, but I have sort of like different words to say it. I think discipline. I've had a lot of schooling, personally, so it's just sort of easy to be disciplined. But I do think that in terms of sitting here and being here and making a commitment and a vow, like you said, but I do think that in my mind it somehow gets confused. I lose the spontaneity and the being in the moment. That can get sort of like what you were saying. You lose beginner's mind, or you lose some sort of, or it gets confusing. That for me personally, the discipline is no big deal. But then I think that I lose being in the moment, sort of.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about the spontaneity. I agree that if you're feeling sort of stale, it's certainly possible to just sit there, and you feel, oh God, here I'm sitting on the cushion one more time. That can happen. And I think we just have to remind ourselves, be aware of that. That itself is just a condition of mind. And if we're sitting and notice that, then that tends to slip away too. That's just another mental condition. I think the tough thing for beginners is, you know, they come thinking, we get a telephone call and says, well, I've always wanted to meditate. Can I come get meditation instruction? You say yes, and you know, come 8:40 Sunday morning. And you never know what people's expectations are. But they come, and there's every place has a lot of people come, learn to sit, they never come back again. And you always wonder what it is. They will only sit when they feel like sitting. And or they sit a few times and they say, well, you know, I don't know that this is doing much for me. And I think that's the big danger to practice. A great deal of, I think there's real value in our practice in sitting through our own resistance. And we're not trying to torment ourselves, obviously. But sitting when we're distracted, when we might really rather be doing something else, watching television, going to see friends, whatever. You might feel like, okay, you know, it'd be a good thing if I spent this 20 or 30 minutes doing some work. Maybe so, maybe not. But if you're going to keep this going, you have to schedule the time, you have to do it. Yeah.
Thank you for the talk. It's interesting to think about. I think this sort of dovetails with what you've been bringing up about also just not only getting yourself to sit, but also the quality of practice and, you know, how I guess for myself there's... one thing I was aware of for the first several years of practice was that what was really motivating me was suffering. There was sort of an acute quality that, and I felt like, I mean, it was clear to me that practice was helping with that somehow. It, you know, obviously not in a kind of take a pill kind of way, but in over. I mean, it just felt so clear to me that this was a helpful thing to do. And sometimes, you know, I would come to the cushion with, again, just feeling a lot of anxiety or whatever it was that I was, you know, experiencing that was uncomfortable. And by the end, there would be some, like you sort of half turn, like you said, where it's like, oh, right, I don't have to feel this committed to suffering. I don't have to feel this caught in it. You know, I can notice it in a different way. It can be in a different relationship with it. And so that was helpful. You know, suffering was helpful as a motivator in that way. You know, I think to keep me hanging in there for so long. Even though, yeah, I did reach a point after some years where I was like, aren't I supposed to be feeling like overall better? And now I think for different reasons, I'm not in as intense of a state a lot of the time. And so I've noticed that I'm not motivated in the same way. But I remember when I was suffering more intensely, I remember sitting, and even now when I have those times when I'm suffering more intensely, while I'm sitting, I often find myself worrying away with the thoughts and trying to figure out the problems and whatever. And as you know, it's that thing where the mind is sort of convinced that if I keep working at this, I'll somehow figure it out. And then there's, oh, right, you know, I'm practicing now. Let me actually try to just, you know, be with this experience rather than working on it. And, you know, but at the times when I'm sitting and I'm not working on something because I'm suffering, it can be more like, oh, I'm just interested in this thing that I want to figure out. Or, oh, I'm, you know, this is a cool thing in my life that I want to pursue thought-wise, you know. And so the shift is a little different. It's not like, oh, if I let go of this, I'm going to feel better. Although there is something where I start to notice it's a little more subtle. It's more like, oh, this is kind of a selfish, craving, gripping kind of approach to my life. Where it's like, oh, goody, I have goody things and I want to hold on to them, and think, you know, for myself, it's that, you know, and so it's more like there's a letting go. It still is a kind of suffering, but it's a different quality, if that makes sense. So anyway, so I feel like the motivation for practice has shifted over time, where the vow is a little different. It's not like, oh, please, you know, really, I just want to feel better. It's more like a recognition that a kind of a selfish approach to life, where I'm trying to get good things for myself and have fun experiences or just, you know, amusements or whatever, that's not... there's something really unfulfilling about that and absent from that, and that a more... And I think the paramitas are helpful there, too, in terms of, like I've been practicing with the generosity paramita, where it's like, how can my life be about what, you know, service or relationship with others, rather than just what I can get for myself. So anyway, it's like the vow is different, but it's still that kind of vow. I agree, like the vow is what helps remind me of, even whether it's just to sit down on the cushion or whether it's during a session of practice, you know, it's like remembering, oh right, sitting here and thinking isn't what I want my life to be about, you know. Doesn't make sense. Anyway, there's a lot of things
to say. Hi. Thank you for your talk. Yeah, I spent years on the pillow suffering and somehow thinking that this was not it. You know, like whatever my experience was, I didn't like it. And now I kind of along the lines that what you were talking about, I see how my mind, you know, I have all these different states of mind, the doing mind, the suffering mind, the, you know, like the compulsive mind, the, you know, like the Superman, you know, I'm going to go out and fix this and do this, and all these things that are sort of like almost identities that come, that have a certain life while I'm sitting. And what I've learned to do is that, like, that's really what my practice is noticing all these experiences without judgment and really just bringing myself back to right here, right now, this moment, even if it's just for a split second, and getting some space between those thoughts and sort of just feeling the emptiness of all of us sitting and sort of the serenity and the peace that comes from that dissolving, if that makes sense. So it's, Sangha is just huge, huge, huge. I'm a member of, I'm participating in a couple of sanghas, and I'm so grateful to this sangha, this well-rooted, really substantial, you know, community, because it's key to deepening my practice, and I needed to do long-term retreats to really get a clue as to what was happening. And really, the more I feel like I sit and I do practice more deeply, I feel like the less I know about anything, which I guess is good, but it's also scary to really experience that sense of, like, you know, powerlessness or don't know, or, you know, and just really be watching, like, what is the next thought, you know, and then not necessarily having to take a bad incarnation, but just take another breath and be here now.
Yeah, you know, for me, the fact that Virya is, you know, has that root of strength and power in a way is kind of deceptive, because I certainly, maybe the greatest impediment for me in my own practice over years has been trying very hard, I don't know for what, but just sort of straining in the practice. And I can't help but feel that, you know, the effort paramita or something like that sort of encourages that. So it's helpful to look back and see that other authors have sort of given a little encouragement to my own thinking, that it's really just persistence and constancy and being there, just being willing to be there and wake up. I certainly don't feel like I wake myself up when I'm sitting on the cushion. You know, I'm there and I'm sitting up straight and breathing, but those moments when you wake up, it doesn't seem to be my doing. It's something that happened to me, and I can say, yeah, okay, I'm willing to stay with this. And it's a willingness rather than something that I willed or brought about. Just sitting there and waking up to whatever's going on, however good or bad or not it is, neutral it is, just being willing to sit there and wake up to what's going on right now and stay with that. And it's different. That is that half turn. It's a different experience. It doesn't necessarily feel better, but it somehow feels more authentic and real to me. I don't know that I'd call it pleasure, just more real somehow and grounded. And you sit there and it comes back, and as long as you're there, it will keep happening again and again and again.
That's exactly what I experienced, and it's kind of like almost like a bubble pops or something. It's like, oh, right?
Yeah. Well, anyone else with one more, maybe? And then we should move on to the next aspect of the morning. No? Good. Well, let's have the four Bodhisattva vows, and then we can talk about announcements.
Being desire, numberless.